Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 377.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we pour one out for Kevin McCarthy. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and a holy motion to vacate. What an interesting time. And today, we'll say whatever needs to be said about Congress. We'll also talk about the Scandinavian sleeping method. We'll talk about one of Taylor Swift's dating red flags and how we should all be on the lookout for this. And the pandemic skip, what is it and has it messed you up? Today's show, folks, what a panel. What a delightful panel. So I'm really excited for this first panelist. He's been on the show a gabillion times, and he introduced the pasta shape, Pascatelli, on this very podcast for the very first time. And it's so thrilling because I now get to see that pasta on sale at various vendors around the world. And it is so exciting to see the Cascatelli available at stores and to know that our listeners were the first to ever hear about it. He is also, more notably, host of the Sporkful Food Podcast, which is just a wonderful, wonderful podcast that you should immediately be subscribing to if you haven't already. It is the wonderful Dan Pashman.
Hey, Nagin. Great to be back here. And I continue to benefit from the Fake the Nation bump. Introducing a new product on this podcast, there's no telling where it could go.
I mean, absolutely. comedians and panelists, you've heard it here. And then also joining us for the first time on this show, and I'm so excited that he's on the show. He has an off-Broadway show going on right now at Under the St. Mark's Theater in the East Village of New York City. It is called Pete and Me. It is a non-depressing look at autism and family that is running for this weekend and next weekend. You should absolutely go see it. I've heard wonderful things about this show. I can't wait to see it myself. He is also just a stand-up comedian that just wows audiences around New York City and the country. He is the wonderful Graham Kay. Hey, Graham.
Thank you very much. I also invented a pasta shape. Never took off. It's called the Graham Kelly. And
yes.
I push it on people when they come to my home, and no one likes it. Cuts the roof
it's
of your
disgusting.
Mouth.
It's disgusting. Yes. It is. What's wrong with that pasta? Why did you ever invent that?
I insist on al dente. But
yeah. yes, this is all of our way of saying fuck you, Dan, for inventing a pasta. Everyone, it's like oddly, it's now oddly on everyone's bucket list. It's like something no one ever knew they wanted to do, but now that I know someone who's done it, I'm like, God damn it!
Right.
So that's what you've done to us. And I just want to remind listeners before we get into the show that if you want to support Fake the Nation and my dreams of forming some sort of a pasta, you can go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. It's the best way to support the show. Oh my gosh, we have bonus episodes of the show, for as little as $4 a month. For $5 a month, you get more stuff. For whatever dollars a month, you get other stuff. I mean, there's so many options. It's a fun time.
Just support Nagin. Don't you love Nagin? Just do it. This stuff doesn't make itself.
See, it's better when you hear Dan say it, but like, why don't you just support Nagin? You know what I mean? But anyways, thank you so much to the people who have been supporting the show low these many years. It's been so delightful to have you as listeners, and to get your thoughts, which you can always send us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. But again, go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad to support the show. And with that, final little tidbit. Friday, it's recap day. Folks, we are recapping The Golden Bachelor. I'm so excited. Wow. It is so ridiculous. Wow. It's so fun. So many people have talked to me about the silver fox that is at the center of The Golden Bachelor. And I can't wait to sexualize him and
objectify, I think.
To objectify him, to just view him as a piece of meat, and to talk about him on Fake the Nation. So we will be recapping the nation on Friday. Tune in for these wonderful bonus episodes that will appear in your feed. All right, let us get into it with topic number one. We're going to start with something light, something silly, something that cleanses the palate. And we found just that in the Scandinavian sleep method. What's that, you say? Apparently, all it takes to follow the Scandinavian sleep method is to use two duvet covers. Instead, so you have a partner, you're in a bed with your partner, and instead of sleeping with one cover, you sleep with two covers. Dan, what are your feelings on the Scandinavian sleep method?
I think it's very smart, honestly. I mean, like, to me, the bigger advantage, it's not so much an issue of pulling covers off in our bed that I worry about. It's more that my wife Janie and I have different temperature preferences. And so we have like a light blanket, and then we each have our own supplemental blanket, hers being much thicker than mine. So we do a version of this already, and that way she has warmer blankets than I do, and everyone can, you know, sleep at the temperature that they're comfortable at. So, you know, I think that that kind of flexibility makes a lot of sense.
Wait, okay, I have a question. So then in the day when you make the bed, then is there a heavy blanket, a light blanket, and then just like an overall bedspread, and like it's, or what's happening?
It depends a bit on the season, but there's the sheet, then there's a light blanket, and then sort of like a second blanket that's seasonal, that's light to medium. And then at different times of year, depending on the temperature, sometimes she'll have an extra blanket on top of her, but I'll have none.
Yes.
Sometimes, and then like in the dead of winter, we'll each have an extra blanket on top, but mine is a very light extra one, and hers will be like a thick fleece blanket.
Right, right.
And then when the bed is made, the nice looking duvet is pulled all the way up, and the sort of like less nice blankets are folded at the edge, at the foot of the bed.
Yes. Okay. Got you. I don't know, Graham, how does all this sound to you?
Well, I think you need to live in a cold climate for the two duvet method to work. If you live in, let's say, Miami in June, and you have two duvets, you're gonna have a very swampy argument all night. I also looked it up. The divorce rate in Sweden is 1 in 2 marriages fail. So I don't know.
Are you serious? Yeah. Currently,
2018. You know, I don't know if that's
okay.
Current enough.
Okay.
Maybe they just invented two duvets in the past 5 years and think they've had a wild swing. I prefer the Graham K method, which is...
which you're calling the Cascatelli?
Yeah, that's right. The Graham K method is you have a girlfriend and she never moves in. And then you just have... I love that. I love when you love somebody and they have their own space. You have your own space.
Right.
You know, you hang out all the time, you know, maybe 6 days a week, but you have a safety valve. And that's the Graham K method. I am single. I am single, but ignore that. Ignore that.
Maybe you just don't have enough duvet cover. If you buy another duvet cover, Graham, you'll have a girlfriend immediately.
Oh, yeah. I do have two. I have the spring one.
Two girlfriends or two duvet covers?
I do not have two girlfriends. Tell Cheryl Ann and Margaret. They'll be pissed.
I think you should update your Tinder profile, Graham, to say that you are Scandinavian comforter system
adherent.
Yeah. And listen, ladies, whatever your temperature preferences in bed are, and you don't, no covers will get stolen if you're with Graham because of this high tech method.
Absolutely. You need to be on Tinder, you need to be showcasing the various levels of blanket that you have for people.
It should be your first photo.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You need to lead with that.
This is going to be huge.
Nobody cares what you look like, Graham. They only care about what your blankets look like.
My clean sheets. Look. I have clean sheets. My pillow smells nice.
By the way, I slept with a comedian once that, as I called them last week. I don't know if that aired last week, but anyways, in my delightfully slutty years, I slept with a comedian once who shall remain nameless. And like, did we sleep together? Did we just like make out for many hours? I don't remember. But I was,
he remembers.
It probably was the latter because his like, I arrived to his home and I was like, oh, you don't clean this. I'm going to loosely use the word home.
Right.
Like, you know, and I was so disgusted. And so that's the other thing that you, that should be front cover of the Tinder photo.
It's
just a clean apartment. You know what I mean? And that'll like get a lot of ladies to drop trout.
That actually, I'm not joking. I think just showing you have a clean bedroom and like a bed frame.
Right.
Could,
yeah.
Should always be one
blocks.
Of the pictures on a dating profile as a man. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. A man, especially a comedian man.
Totally.
Dan, you were going to say?
Well, I mean, I like that statistic that Graham mentioned about, you know, about the divorce rate in Sweden, because it points to something I wanted to raise, which is like, I find it very funny that things like this are named the Scandinavian method. There is this fascination with Scandinavia that we have as if they have everything figured out. My wife's family is from Czechoslovakia, and in Slovakia, they also have two different duvet system in many homes. It's very common there, too, but nobody calls it the Slovak method because
it's not hot.
Who wants to replicate that? You're like, you probably would assume there must be cabbage involved somewhere. Like, it's not appealing.
My mother
is
from Slovakia, Eastern Slovakia, and I can attest that this, the duvet method there is the cheapest sheets you could buy.
lowest thread count
right. yeah totally.
I also want to, I think Dan, this is a really great point. What was that like coffee thing they do, Fuga Kige or whatever?
They have coffee things, but I mean,
what
I'm
is
sure
that
like
don't they have like a coffee afternoon rest break coffee thing? You should know this food podcaster.
Are you talking about Hygge?
The Hygge.
That's like a cozy time or whatever. Yeah, there's a whole song about that in the Frozen Broadway musical.
I just want to say in general, I'm also kind of a little over the Scandinavian primacy when it comes to dwelling and like furniture and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would like to promote Slovakia on this podcast real hard right now.
Yes.
I want to see your Slovakia furnishing. I want to see your Slovakian bedspreads. Okay, where are they at?
Dan, have you been? Yeah. You've been to Slovakia?
I have a couple times. Yeah.
Bed situation there is not great. It's not.
Yeah. No.
Hard mattress.
My wife spent 6 months there teaching English, and let's just say that if I remember correctly, like it was something weird, like the toilet was in the shower or something. Like
nice.
The apartment where she was staying. Yeah, it was
I prefer my toilet in the shower. I don't know why that's weird for you guys.
I mean, it's efficient for cleaning purposes, but
I will say.
Okay, folks.
Okay, go off.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Say what you will say.
I will say that maybe the reason why there is a Scandinavian dominance with design and function is because someone has traveled to Slovakia. And
all of Scandinavia is in response to Slovakia.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, got you. Yeah. That's a theory we're going with. I challenge anyone at Fake the Nation to prove us wrong. That's what it is.
I love you, Slovensko. Just, you know, anyway.
Let us move on to the second dumb topic of the day, which is of this segment. Now, I've declared on the show before that I'm not a Taylor Swift connoisseur, but even I have seen the images of her hanging out with her new boyfriend's mom. She was spotted sitting with him at a game. Her new boo is some sort of a football player that I understand to be very famous, though I've never heard of him. I'm one of your typical ladies who doesn't understand the comings and goings of the ball on that grassy court. And she was working. But I did see images of her hanging out with a mom, and she was working hard at getting into that mom's good graces from what I could tell on these, as I was lip reading, you know, these social media posts of her talking to the mom. But this is interesting for the rest of us because experts say this kind of behavior could be a relationship red flag, that it's an attempt to get validation and prematurely force intimacy, as some of the experts have said, and that could lead to a split. So my question for the two of you is, does this strike you as a relationship red flag, either for Taylor Swift or for literally anyone who tries to introduce their... to hang out with someone's mom too soon?
Well, I mean, first off, Nagin, I should tell you that I am both a huge football fan and a Swiftie, so it's a good thing you have me here to help you navigate this
right
complex
for the
and very exciting topic.
I'm so glad you went.
I know nothing about either, so here we go.
If you've seen the Taylor Swift documentary Miss Americana, as I have twice,
Jesus,
you know that
Dan,
she.
My God. Okay, go ahead. Continue.
I was the first Swiftie in my family. Now I have my wife and my two daughters, who are like 13 and 10, are right in the sweet spot for all of this. So it's a big thing in our household. But anyway, I do like her a lot. But she says flat out in the documentary, she's like, I have like sort of an endless need for approval and validation, and that is what drives me, you know, but it's a problem, but I sort of can't stop. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
But she talks about sort of like how important it is to her to be liked, and that the feeling of the crowd cheering for her is sort of intoxicating, which you two as comedians, I'm sure you haven't sold out MetLife Stadium, but I'm sure you know that feeling, and that it can be intoxicating. And so
And we haven't made a pasta shape as well. Okay, Dan, if you want to point out
the weaknesses. No one cheered for that, in person at least. But the point is, so I think that she would own the idea that she is a person who needs a lot of validation. Mm. I don't think that she would argue that point. I think she is my read on her is that she's probably the kind of person who ingratiates herself to anybody who she can get, who she's in a room with. I'm sure she can be extremely charming when she wants to be. So like, it wouldn't shock me to say that that's true. The idea that it forces intimacy prematurely, like I don't know that Travis Kelce needs to be pressured into becoming intimate with Taylor Swift any faster. I'm sure he's like ready to go.
He's not like a slow right. your roll, Taylor.
I'm not ready, Taylor. So you know, like but the idea that she's, you know. All that being said, if you listen to her song Antihero, I think she's also pretty open about the fact that, like, she's a person who, you know, like all of us has plenty of issues. And I think, you know, wouldn't shock me if a person who has been that famous for that long is a lot to handle in a relationship.
Yo, God,
So, you know, is she going out of her way to ingratiate herself to Travis Kelce's mother? Yes, probably. Like, is that a red flag? I don't know. I mean, like, it's better than being obnoxious to your significant other's mother, I have mixed feelings, you know. I don't know. What do you think, Graham?
Well, Graham, have you dated Taylor Swift? What's your position?
I have not. She is not responding.
Well, she didn't know about your duvet covers.
Yes. I have a spring and a winter duvet. I can't stress that enough. I recently invested in expensive sheets. Anyway,
nice.
When I saw this, I thought to myself, okay, so if you like an older man, if you're a woman, you have daddy issues. If you like, now that you like a man your age appropriate, you have mommy issues. You know, like what women can't win. I thought about it more, and I was like, they've been dating 2 weeks and she's hanging out with his mom. I usually it's like, what, 3 months before you meet the mom?
Oh, I mean, yeah, like months and months and months.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
When do you, like, Dan, do you remember when you met your girlfriend's mom at the girlfriend?
We moved fairly quickly. Our first date was in October, but it must have been at least a couple months. I'm sure it was not this fast, you know?
Yeah.
And if she had been saying, I want to meet your mom. Yeah, it probably would have made me feel a little bit like, you know, like you're kind of moving a little bit fast here. Take it easy. Yeah. Like, you know, I think anybody, like, you know, that being said, I think sort of the other thing you got to factor, like the rules of dating Taylor Swift, like I don't know that we can compare this, you know, there's only so many places that they can go.
Yeah.
And, you know, like she's in a break on her tour, like in a few weeks, she's going to be halfway across the world.
Right.
And so like she's got this like whatever it is, 6 weeks or so break on her tour that they have a chance to spend a lot of time together. And then she's going to be gone again.
It's true. Yeah, I as a touring comedian who is single, if I have like 3 weeks off, I really try and like get my hooks in.
Right, yeah. Meet everyone's mom.
Before I'm gone for 10 days or something. You know what I mean? And then they stray.
Yeah.
You know?
Your second date is meet your mom.
Yeah, meet my mom.
Yeah. And then by the end of the 3 weeks, you break up. It's great.
Yeah. I do think that she, the reason why she's so successful is because she is a creative person who is also type A. And I think that happens to a lot of really successful artists. You have to kind of have both.
And yeah.
I think that she's like very business. She's like, I meet the mom, I do the thing. Blah, blah, blah. I think it must be like, I bet you it's a very intense thing to date Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I bet you.
I bet you she has a fucking spreadsheet in like, you know, and then it's like, okay, I'm starting to date. This is the spreadsheet for Travis football player. And, you know, and it's like item one, buy tickets to games.
She's like, I don't, the football courts, Travis football player.
Yeah, she doesn't have time for last names. She has to be efficient. Swift, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Swifties don't know.
She doesn't have time for last names, and then people like me also don't know any of these people's last names.
Right, but I would imagine it's also very one of the hard things. Not that we need to feel too sorry for Taylor Swift, but I do have some empathy for anybody who's that one of the few people on the planet who are that
recognizable.
Famous.
Yeah,
you know, like every time she meets anyone in any situation, they are sizing her up and they are going to report back to every single person they know. What was she like?
Yeah.
Was she nice?
I also
Did she
have to
smile?
Say, like, as, you know, as someone who's like, I've met some celebrities in the line of doing the work that I do. And I've noticed that, like, when you earn their trust, there's not that many people that they can just sort of like let loose with or whatever. So when they like determine that someone is trustworthy, they like become fast friends. There isn't a slow build up, I think, the way there is with the rest of us. It's
right,
just
because
like,
they spend so much of their time being so guarded.
Exactly. So when they are like, oh no, I could trust this person, they're like, oh, you're my friend. And like, and then you're friends. And in some ways it's kind of refreshing because it's there's those like very few questions left, you know what I mean? About like, oh, I don't know, are we friends? Like, it's just like quickly determined that you're friends or not.
Mm, right.
But like it is, I think, a function of like being famous that puts, you know, some of those stressors on general, any kind of relationship. Well, folks, let me know, what do you think of this? Is it a relationship red flag or does it make sense? Dan had, I would say, an alarming amount of compassion for the situation, for Taylor Swift's situation. Just want to point it out. Where are you guys? Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll continue our chatter. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing losing that money? I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. So, if you'll think back to January, Kevin McCarthy went through 15 votes before he was elected Speaker of the House. I would say it was a humiliating process for him, though he seemed to be totally cool with it. The 15th vote involved something called a motion to vacate, where he agreed to a motion to vacate where one person, any member of Congress, could basically call for an ouster of Kevin McCarthy for literally any to no reason. And so he kind of did this to himself. That said, he's managed to keep the job for like 10 months. Not even a year. It feels like years, but he's only been in that job for less than a year. And there was, so when Matt Gaetz brought this motion to vacate to the floor, everyone assumed there would be some jockeying, some maybe Democrats wouldn't vote, so maybe they would somehow delay the vote or whatever, like stuff like that. They just imagined a lot of things would happen. And I was following the news yesterday as it was all going down. And then suddenly it like just happened. There is no Speaker of the House. All the Democrats voted to oust him, along with 8 Republicans who are members of the Freedom Caucus, unofficially voiced by Matt Gaetz, who is a total weirdo, yep. I would say.
He's my guy. He's my guy. I love the Gaetz. Big Gaetz are over here.
he's I would say he doesn't have very many friends in Congress.
He's got this guy. He's got this guy.
Except for Grant. Graham, as a congressperson himself, Graham loves Matt Gaetz.
As a fellow coward, I love Matt Gaetz. Love his stride away from a problem.
Well, I mean, like, Graham, what do you think of this whole thing? And I mean, were you surprised that that your buddy Matt took it this far?
I am not surprised. I think that a guy like him, he will do anything to be in the forefront of a news cycle. I think he does not care about the country. I think he loves, I think that that sort of, that that Freedom Caucus group, all they care about is themselves. They are the most Republican because who cares about anybody else but yourself?
Right.
You know?
And it's interesting with Matt Gaetz in particular, like, I wonder, I think about this with Ted Cruz as well. Like, I feel like Ted Cruz really just wanted to be a, like, an actor, like, do musical theater.
Yes.
And he just, like, it just, like, unfortunately became a senator or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think that, like, about, and obviously, like, Vivek Ramaswamy, like, he wants to be, like, a rapper. Like, why doesn't he just go do that? Like, there's so many people that I think are, like, getting the, like, end up in politics because of a fame aspect, but like what they really want to do is something in entertainment. And I think Matt Gaetz really just wanted to be like a shock jock kind of podcaster or whatever.
Totally.
And it doesn't quite make sense, his job, because his job is supposed to be serving a district, and it's kind of really tangential to what he does do, which is just shit storms. You know, he does feel like he's like, you know, like a sideways, way less lovable Howard Stern, right? He just wants to say incendiary things and then just have that be his brand. And so...
you can always tell by the hair of what people's priorities are. Do you know what I mean? The hair and the teeth.
True.
He's got those, like, fake veneers, the crazy hair. He has, like, Conan's hair. Like, Conan's in showbiz.
Conan in showbiz. Yeah. He's allowed to have that hair.
He's supposed to have that hair. You know, this guy's in showbiz in his head.
Dan, what are your thoughts on Matt Gaetz's hair? No, what are your thoughts on this whole fucking thing? I mean, I was shocked.
I mean, I wasn't shocked. I mean, like, Matt Gaetz and his group of 8 or 10 congressmen, I mean, they've been planning this since McCarthy. You know, they only agreed to let McCarthy be speaker on the condition that they would have the ability to call for this vote and remove him very, very easily, much more easily than it would have been in Congress's past. And so, basically the condition was, like, if McCarthy compromises with the Democrats at all, they're going to pull this lever. And he compromised with them a little bit a few months ago, and they shook their fists and threatened, and he compromised again, and they shook their fists and threatened. And when they passed this extension to avoid the shutdown the other day, the 45-day extension, and McCarthy compromised with Democrats to get it done, you know, Gaetz and his ilk, you know, pulled the lever that they've been threatening to pull. And so it was only a matter of time before they were going to do it, because if they didn't do it now, then they would look like fools, because they've been their whole negotiation in January was to give them the power to do this, and they've been threatening it every other week since then. So at a certain point, if they don't ever do it, no one's going to take them seriously. So they had to do it. But I think you're right that they thrive on wreaking havoc. And that's sort of a certain group of extreme Republican Congress people, and even some of the less, you know, extreme ones. You know, I think the question that I'm more interested in is, like, what should the Democrats do? Because, as you said, really, like, all the Democrats voted to oust McCarthy. There's no guarantee that the person if it ends up being someone else, that person will be better for Democrats, right, or better for the country. You know, I think the Democrats' posture, as I understood it, which I thought was pretty good, was sort of like, look, if McCarthy will agree to work with us on some issues and to try to find some common ground and get things done, then we'll vote him back in. But McCarthy's response was, I'm not talking to the Democrats. So they said, fine, then we're not voting for you. But if that changes, like, I think they should still be open to compromise, because they're not going to get a Democrat in there, so it's going to be a Republican. So, you know, I sort of feel like that hopefully the Democrats can use this as leverage, as a way to actually get things done, and then they can position themselves as the party that actually gets things done.
The thing, the part that was really surprising to me was that Kevin McCarthy actually called Hakeem Jeffries and said, before all this went down, it was just like, yeah, you guys should basically, like, vote for me, like, just because, and I'm not giving you any concessions. And they were like, okay, well, in that case, like, and I actually thought the Democrats would keep him and vote present and change the numbers and make it impossible for this to happen. because just for stability's sake or whatever, and because in November they're going to have to redo the fucking budget stuff, and you know, we averted a crisis where the government shut down literally a couple days ago, and that's exactly why Matt Gaetz called for this, because he's, you know, a chaos monkey and doesn't, you know, he wants the government to shut down or whatever, but he doesn't want to see anyone working with Democrats, and the way McCarthy got it through the finish line and was working with the Democrats. So my thought was, he'll just work with the Democrats again to save his job. But like, that's not how it happened. And then at first I thought, it feels a little vindictive or something for the Democrats to like vote this way. But then if you look at the evidence, it's like, well, he cut a spending deal with the White House, then reneged on it, right? Like, he wasn't a good player when it came to that, to the spending deals that they had. He passed some shitty legislation along the way. He launched an impeachment inquiry, like, I would say cavalierly, against Biden, you know, with very, you know, little to no evidence, with members not even approving of the impeachment inquiry. It just seems like, he wasn't, you know, these actions didn't make him beloved among Democrats. You know what I mean? So I can kind of see why they did that. Now, here's my other question for you guys. Newt Gingrich wrote an op-ed asking, basically calling for the ouster of Matt Gaetz, being like, this guy's the problem. And he is the problem. If he hadn't have done this, if he hadn't have insisted on them of that and that clause in the speaker's tenure, then none of this would have happened. And what do you think of the idea of ousting Matt Gaetz?
What does that mean, ousting? That. I mean, he's an elected representative. You can't
him. Ousting him from the party. Like, you can, I think you can like oust people from the party, not from their seat.
Okay.
But you could say, like, you're not in our party anymore.
I'm from Canada, and I was very confused. I was like, you could just get rid of him, I guess.
Right.
No. Yeah. Party affiliation. Yeah, sorry.
Blast him to the moon.
I think Matt Gaetz is, I wouldn't put too much focus on him. He is a symptom of a larger problem. You know, the problem is that, you know, like, you know, if you get rid of him, one of the others of his ilk will step forward to seize the headlines.
Right.
And look, it would be. Like, when Trump got elected in, what was it, 2016, I said that I think that, you know, either he's either going to break the country in half or he's going to break the Republican Party in half. And if I were the Democrats, my strategy would be to force the issue among the Republican Party, to force them to choose, you got to keep winning elections, but give the somewhat centrist Republicans a way out, an opportunity to like work together and make them look good instead of just trying to bury all of them, because that's not going to get you what you want. But like, you know, I think like maybe this will work. Like, I think they're doing pretty well right now, but you know, hopefully they can get McCarthy to come back to the table and negotiate something with them, and maybe he gets voted in as speaker with 300 votes, which would be, you know, a huge majority on the condition that he works with Democrats. I'm not optimistic that will happen, but like,
there's a possibility. Because I do want
to
say,
I don't understand why he's so reluctant to do that. Like, he's not from the craziest red district.
He's in from California.
Like, right. So like, I don't understand why it's not in his own best interest to be like, I'm the guy that reshaped Congress and got it working again by working with Democrats. I feel like he could run for president if he did that.
My feeling is like, the smart move is marginalize the Freedom Caucus that are,
yes.
And again, you want to talk about numbers, and just to let's make ourselves feel better for like 2 seconds here. The Freedom Caucus is eight people, like eight people voted to oust McCarthy out of 221 Republicans. So these are like, we're giving them way too much power, like just way too much power. So like, if I'm Kevin McCarthy, I'm just like, yeah, let's marginalize those people. Let's work with moderate Democrats. This is ridiculous. Like, I'm not, it's not fun anymore. You know what I mean? Like, trying to appease those people. Why are we appeasing those people? It's ridiculous. So, it doesn't mean you're not going to get some of your crazy, like super conservative legislation passed, yes, that's what that means. But you'll get some of your moderate, you know, legislation passed, and that'll be great. We'll avert shutdowns. We don't have to like hem and haw over that shit forever endlessly. It's boring. It's stupid. Everyone's tired of it.
I couldn't agree more. That as someone who wrote their undergrad thesis on the rise of fascism in Germany. There was a small little group of guys called the National Socialist German Workers Party, and people just kept trying to appease them, this little group, yep, instead of marginalizing them, and they kind of just let this little group that was never big. Germans were educated. They were like, these guys are bad. Yeah. And they just kind of let them encroach over time.
Yeah.
And you have to some way marginalize these people, and you cannot appease them. You cannot just give them a little teddy bear to play with. You have to like slice them off.
Yeah.
Slice them in half.
Yeah. So. No, that's exactly right. Folks, where are you at on this ouster of Kevin McCarthy? As of the time of this taping on Wednesday, we still don't have any word on. There's like the interim dude who took over, Patrick Henry or something. I can't remember his name. So that dude is like kind of officially like, you know, doing the interim role, but they've got to figure out what's really going to happen. We don't know. It could take some time. It's frustrating. All right. Let me know what you think. Let us move on to topic number three. So we read a piece in The Cut called The Pandemic Skip, which the writer Katie Schneider defines as the strange sensation that our bodies might be a step out of sync with our minds. And one of the things she talks about in the piece is the warped passage of time. And in fact, studies show that stressful experiences tend to make it feel unclear how much time is passing. That's from the article. And I guess my first question for both of you is, you know, now that we're at this time in the pandemic, and I felt really clearly in the last couple of few months that we're in this period where like I'm looking back at the pandemic as like a historical phenomenon as opposed to like something I'm in still, you know, how have you sensed the passage of time during and then since the pandemic? Like, where are you mentally, and how much time has felt like it has passed?
I'm not the best person to ask this because my life kind of continued in a way. Like, I stayed in Brooklyn. My friends all stayed in Brooklyn. We had like a group of 10 people that was my bubble. And we would like hang out on like rooftops of friends' houses, and like, and then I would do comedy shows like in parks. I would bike to comedy shows in parks. And I was very stressed and scared for the first, you know, year.
Few months, yeah.
But, you know, I saw people all the time, you know, in like a social distance way outdoors, but I saw people all the time and I still got to perform.
It
feels like a long time. It feels like there is it for me. It feels like the pandemic, which was when we lived in it, was like 2 years. It feels like that, and that was like 3 years ago. It feels like that was 5 years ago to me. It feels like before
right.
pandemic times feels doesn't feel like a skip. It feels like extra time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It feel like I was a different guy. I was fancy free.
It sounds like Graham, you're saying it's like it was an alternate universe.
It was an alternate, yeah. I was also, it might also be my age. I was like in my 30s and now I'm in my 40s. So maybe I just sort of came out of it a middle-aged man.
You had reading glasses,
yeah,
you didn't know where they
I
came from.
I have reading glasses now, for real. Staring at a I wrote a dumb script and I spent just looking at a computer all day. Ruined my eyes. That's what I, not that I got older. That's not it. And anyway, yeah, I came out a middle-aged man. So yeah.
Dan, how has your perception of time been?
Yeah, I mean, certainly I agree with Graham that the pandemic itself feels like it was so long ago.
Yeah.
Like, I can't, like, it's fall 2023. I mean, like, it was a year and a half ago. It was still, it was sort of like the winter 2022 to 2023 when we had that big bounce back.
Yeah.
Wait, was that right? See, I don't even remember. That's the other thing. I feel like I don't remember so many things.
See, I'm wrong. It was the winter of 2021 into 2022.
Yeah. That was the Omicron or whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
Where we thought it was gone and it came back.
Omicron. Yeah. I'm losing my mind.
I remember. I brought it. Right. I brought it to the Detroit area. Sorry.
Oh, that was you.
Good. Yeah. Oh, that was you.
Thanks, sorry, Brandon. Midwest.
Yeah. Good job. No, I remember because it was like the Christmas, so that a lot of people had to cancel their plans.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. So that was coming up on 2 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Like this holiday season, it will be 2 years since that holiday season. But
it feels like a bowl of porridge. Like I can't distinguish stuff.
It's very disorienting. I agree with that. Although I do wonder, like, big events in life and the world lead us to mark time. And so it forces us to stop and think, when was that? How long ago was that? I think that most life, once you're like not in school anymore, all is this sort of like
It's bolus.
It's like this chewed up mush and you don't have anything to mark time. And so, you know, like, what's the worst cliche? You know, kids, everyone who has older kids comes to you and says, cherish it, it goes by so fast.
Yeah.
And I always think to myself, really? Because it feels like it's taking forever. if you think back, like, yes, on one hand, when you're in the rush of life, it feels like it's going by fast. But if I think back to when my older daughter, who's now almost 13, was a baby, that feels like forever ago.
Yeah.
When I think back to even like her graduation from elementary school,
yeah,
feels like forever ago. And so, I part of me wonders if like we're in general bad at tracking time and it's just that we need big events to remind us of how bad we are at it.
It's interesting because in the piece they talk a lot about like different age groups and what they skipped, basically. And she writes in the piece, we've heard of those freshmen in high school who, never having attended middle school, went back to their classrooms punching each other like 12-year-olds.
Huh.
A friend skipped from 57 to 60, and when she started dressing up to leave the house again, realized she felt distinctly out of sorts in her clothes. Her dresses felt suddenly too short or too colorful. At 57, she said, patterns felt ironic. At 60, they didn't. And that's a little bit like what you're saying, Graham, that like you went into the pandemic like a vibrant 30-something,
yes,
and you came out of it a middle-aged man with reading glasses.
Yes.
That's like, I think like you, I had also a very social pandemic. And I was on rooftops, a lot of rooftops doing stand-up, right? So like there was a few months where none of that was going on and it felt weird. But then like once I figured out a sort of pandemic routine, it involved a lot of friendships. It involved a lot of rooftops. It involved, honestly, a fair amount of stand-up. And so I don't feel that like I came out of a cocoon feeling, but I do feel that like, I mean, I don't live like that anymore. I was extremely happy to see the rooftop shows go away in favor of an indoor show. You know what I mean? Like that time, it feels confusing. And I also feel like my kid was in a good age for it because she was like one. So it's not like she was in school.
Perfect.
She was like going to do the same kind of shit anyway.
Yeah. Pooping her
and
pants.
I almost... And shit her pants,
you
know what
anywhere.
I mean?
Yeah.
She fucking, she shit her pants, she did some coke, when we allowed it. Just a couple rails, nothing too much.
You want to get a toddler more energy.
Yeah. Like,
they're
so
always
they can
sleeping.
Fucking really rave. The one of the age groups that she talks about in the piece is that she was in her 30s, and she talks about there being a tight arithmetic to these years because of the biological clock. I would imagine that's like an interesting, that was a weird age group to be in for if you're a lady and your fucking uterus is decaying.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, because you don't have one.
Another
of
win.
Baby making
another
machines.
Win for the fellas. No, but that does that is like quite something. I always thought like what the worst age, I was always wondering like what the worst age would be for the pandemic? You know, is it like...
And would you come down on it?
Is it high school? Because those are pretty, you know, important years. And you missed 2 years of high school. You know, it's either... I think it's either like high school or when you're like retired after 65 and you're like, you've worked your whole life. And you're like, these are the years,
you wanna travel.
Baby! I work my whole life at UPS. And now I'm going to go to Florida.
Right.
And it's like...
This, you've been waiting for
I have 10 years where I can still walk and enjoy stuff, you know? And there, two of those are gone. 20% of like my ability to have free time, free money, and walk are gone. And who knows?
I would say high school, though, is a really... Is like top on the list because that shit is so formative.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. And I mean, look, it depends on where your kids are going to school. Like for us, we only had remote learning for the first few months.
Yeah.
And then they were back in school the following year with masks. But yeah, like, you know, it would be very disruptive, you know, for young people. I mean, our kids were like 7 and 10 when we started the pandemic. And my wife and I said, you know, we talked to each other about how lucky we felt that our kids were those ages. Because, you know, the people with really little kids... Mm-hmm. That was awful. Like my brother has kids who are younger. It's like they can't, like they couldn't really do remote learning without help. They can't really be left alone
right,
for
like
any long stretch.
Like a kindergartner, like that would have been
kindergartner,
really
right.
tough.
They need a parent sitting next to them the entire time. So if you have a job too, you know, what do you do? We were lucky that our kids were old enough that they could mostly handle remote learning and then they could mostly entertain themselves. But we're also still young enough that they, like, didn't mind hanging out with their parents.
Right,
you know,
right,
whereas,
right.
Like,
they
if
didn't
it happened now, my
yet.
13-year-old would be pissed.
So pissed. I never wanted to see my parents at all starting at age 11.
Yeah.
Okay, well, folks, let me know about, you know, how do you perceive the pandemic skip? Was there a skip for you? I'm so curious to hear. Hit me up. Folks, that is the end of the show. I always feel good after an episode of Fake the Nation. I feel particularly good after this episode of Fake the Nation because the two of you are so goddamn fun. My God, do I want the people of Fake the Nation to know where to find you and all the stuff that you do. Graham, where do they do that?
All right, my Instagram handle is hard. There's no way to make it easy. My name is weird, especially for Americans. There are no Grahams in America. I say my name's Graham. 10 out of 10 times they go, Gerg? or they go, Gram, like the unit of weight.
What do you say, like the cracker?
Yeah, the cracker.
I always say like the cracker, and here's what I'm about to do. Well, it depends what neighborhood you're in. It's at Mr. Graham K is my Instagram. Mr. M-R, not M-I-S-T-E-R, but M-R. Then Graham is spelt like the cracker. And then K, not the letter K, but K. A-Y. Mr. Graham like the cracker, K like the jeweler. And you can find all my info. I got a link tree there. One thing, and there are two things, but the main thing I want you to know is that I have an off-Broadway one-man show, one-person show, and I'm performing it at Under St. Mark's Theater in Greenwich Village, New York City. It is called Pete and Me, A Non-Depressing Look at Autism and Family. It is a solo show about growing up with my brother, what it means to be the sibling of a disabled person and the sacrifices you have to make as a child and what it means for me when my parents pass of natural causes or I go up to Canada and shoot them in the head.
Jesus Christ, that promo got dark just now. Folks, and then you and I don't know, did you say this? It's grahamk.com is where you can get
you can
tickets,
get tickets
get
thank
all
you
information.
I forgot you can get tickets at grahamk.com. That is spelled like the cracker, like the jeweler.com. I also have a comedy special if you don't live in the New York area. If you live within a 5-hour drive, I expect you to come. And, so I have a comedy special on YouTube. It's available for free. It's called Graham K. Live in a Bowling Alley.
All right. GrahamK.com, folks. Go see, go watch, do what you got to do. It's going to be a fun one. And Dan Pashman, where do people find you?
So the Sporkful Food Podcast, we like to say it's not for foodies, it's for eaters. Even if you're not, it's not about restaurants and chefs and cooking and recipes. It's more about storytelling, and we do science and history and culture and identity all through the lens of food, and we have a lot of fun doing it. So check out the Sporkful Food Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, if you want to try my my pasta shape, the original version is made by Sfoglini. They're a great artisanal pasta company. It's spelled S-F-O-G-L-I-N-I. Go to sfoglini.com. You can order it, ship right to your door. We also sell the cascatelli. Sfoglini's cascatelli is at Whole Foods, is at some Walmarts, is in the Fresh Market, and many other boutique stores. And I launched two new shapes with Sfoglini called Vesuvio and Quattrotini, which are also on the website and in some stores. So go get them, and they hold a lot of sauce, and they're really delicious.
They are really delicious. Having eaten them myself, I cannot recommend them highly enough. They're so, the cascatelli, at least. I haven't tried the new ones, which I'm excited to try, but the original, so delicious. So what is it? Had forkability?
Yeah, so these are like the three metrics I came up with to judge all pasta shapes. There's forkability, which is how well does it stay on the fork, sauceability, how well does sauce adhere, and tooth sink ability, which is how satisfying is it to sink your teeth into it. So when I spent 3 years trying to invent my own pasta shape, these were the metrics that I was trying to come up with a shape that would just nail all three of these. Frankly, I think a lot of shapes, maybe they're good at one or two of these, but they don't nail all three.
This one really does. I truly can attest, and I get such a thrill when I see cascatelli on sale at stores near me. So just buy it when you see it, folks. It's so exciting. And you know where to find me and all the things I do. I just want to remind you that I'm going to be at the Kennedy Center on October 21. And I'm going to be in at the Reston Community Center on November 17th. And all this information is on my website that is theoretically updated. I believe that it is updated. So November 17th, Reston Community Center, which is just outside of Washington, D.C., I'm going to be doing my full hour. And then I'm going to be doing at the Kennedy Center, like I'm emceeing this show called Comedy Saves Democracy. And I'm going to be doing a weird thing that I've never done before. So theoretically, it'll be a good time unless it's a disaster because I haven't done it before. We'll see.
Either way, it'll be fun to watch.
But the good news is, I'm doing it at just a tiny little venue called the Kennedy Center. So it's not like there are any stakes there. But again, you can find all my stuff at NagineFarsad.com. You can support the show at Patreon.com/NagineFarsad. What I really want to do is thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our fantastic producer, Andrew McGuire. Gabi Alter wrote our theme music. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making the show a possibility. If you have any questions, thoughts, ideas, you can email us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much to everyone who's been coming out to shows in San Francisco and San Diego. It's so great to see Fake the Nationers in the wild. Don't forget, we have a recap for you, Recap the Nation, of The Golden Bachelor, coming to you this Friday, October 6th. And that's it, I think. I think I said it all, folks. We will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.